Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 175, being recorded on the 20th of April, 2017, with special guests Amit Bapat and Dave McPherson. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale and our special guests. Unfortunately, Evan is at a, what do you say, Kale? Like some kind of a morale event.
So they were going to the movie, so I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, apparently they've taken over the entire movie theater over there in Charlotte. So watch out for him if you're in that area. But let's get started with some of the updates in the Azure space as usual, and then we'll turn the mic over to our special guest. What do you got there, Kale? What's cooking this week?
No blockchain stuff this week, but we got a bunch of other things. So, yeah, a couple of them that are close here to stuff that I spend a bit of time on is DocDB is one of the big ones. So there's a nice blog post out here from one of the PMs on the team talking about, obviously, the NoSQL database of DocDB being this kind of very highly scalable, available data repository for people to use. But it goes into some depth about what we actually use it for ourselves, specifically on the Windows and Universal Store and the IoT Hub teams, and how they're able to kind of take advantage of that to store that semi-structured data out in the NoSQL format with DocDB. So it's a pretty cool thing to kind of see through, because we're talking about some pretty high scale loads there from a read and write perspective. When you think about, you know, the Windows operating system being able to feed some telemetry back to that, as well as, you know, Xbox Live and some of those different features that are using that for different aspects of their service, you're talking about some massive scale services. So it's a pretty interesting read.
That's good. Yeah, that is a pretty good one. And, you know, we've got to have another show on DocDB. We haven't done that in a while. I think it's getting more and more more popular for sure. And then you mentioned to me about the Ubuntu end of life. What's up with that?
Yeah, so there's a couple, if anybody's using our different flavors of Linux and things out there that we run in Azure and Windows as well. But specifically the one here we're talking about is Ubuntu. So there's different flavors of that. The 12, 14, and 16 SKUs are the ones that come to my mind. And they typically have like the LTS, the long-term support versions of those. But obviously these things do eventually end of life. And, you know, Ubuntu 12.04 specifically is coming into life here soon. I don't know the exact date. I think it's the end of April is when that's happening. So I think that's a five-year support cycle that's actually coming to an end. So if anybody's on version 12, some really old Ubuntu images, probably need to upgrade to 14 or 16.
Great. Well, I'll pick one on the Cloudera support for Azure Data Lake Store. Cloudera Enterprise Data Hub now, you know, lets you run Spark, Hive, and MapReduce workloads, and you can point to the Azure Data Lake Store to do all of that, right? So this is just, I think they're a big partner of ours, Cloudera, and we should have them on the show at some point to talk about their offerings, but that integration with Azure Data Lake Store should be interesting. And then this is, I don't know if we talked about this before, Kale. Apparently now all the Azure VMs now support dual NICs. This has always been the case. I think only the higher end ones used to support it, right? And now we have them on all of them. Is that how it is?
Yeah, I'd like to dig into this a little bit actually, and it would be great if Evan was here because he's pretty much a geek on the network side. But
right.
I'd like to understand some of the, because we did have some certain limitations around those things. Like we could add multi-NIC, but only one of them could function as the input side and whatnot. And I'm just interested to see if we've kind of changed anything with that. So it might be a good topic to kind of dig into in a future episode.
It says that now all the VMs support two Mornix, which is
Nice.
interesting. And it's available in most of the Azure regions, not all of them, of course, but many of them. And then there's been a whole bunch of essentially services that have gone GA. This has been a big week for GA services. Azure Analytics Services has gone GA. Azure Monitor is now GA. Let's see what else. Cognitive Services is now GA. Some new Cognitive Services APIs like the Content Moderator, Computer Vision, Face API, etc. Application Gateway WAF is now generally available in Germany. So we'll put all these links in the show notes, but a bunch of them became GA this week. And there's another update I want to talk about. We haven't really mentioned this before. It's something I came across as part of my current engagement with my customer. We are using or planning to use Azure services App Services Environment, or ASE, or ACE, as the product team likes to call it. And that's been around for a while. It's like the dedicated version of App Services for enterprise customers, which you can set up in your own virtual network and things like that. If you have an ExpressRoute circuit, for example, that's something that is very important. But there's been a bunch of updates to that, or soon to be released updates to that. So they're calling it ACE V2, or like it's the second incarnation of that service, and they've done things like increase the maximum number of nodes. For example, it used to be 50, now it's 100, and they've made a bunch of changes to the portal in ACE, where it kind of has feature parity with what's available in the regular app services, right? The multi-tenant version. So that's I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But I thought that was very, that's something that users should be aware of. I missed that update, and happy to read it when I did. All right, then is there anything else, Kayla, or should we get started with our guests?
No, I think it's good.
Okay, great. Amit has we've had him on the show before, and we appreciate him joining us back and bringing his colleague Dave McPherson with him. So, Amit, please reintroduce yourself to our listeners, and then after you do that, Dave can do that as well.
Hey, good afternoon, Sujit and Kale. My name is Amit Bapat. I am Program Manager for Azure Key Vault.
Great. And Dave?
And I'm Dave McPherson. I'm Program Manager for Azure Security. I'm working on encryption at rest.
Awesome, great. And that's kind of the topic that we originally reached out to you guys to about, which is encryption at rest. And is this something new, first of all, Dave? Is this a new thing, encryption at rest, or is it something that we always had?
I'd say we've always had it to varying degrees. If you're familiar with BitLocker and similar drive encryption technologies, it's been there for a long time.
Right, so we've had it. I guess on our machines and on servers, on premises and things like that. How does this kind of work in the cloud? What's the angle over there?
Well, the goal would be similar in terms of the security protections, that if somebody gets a hold of one of the hard drives offline, that they can't go pop it into another computer, boot it up, and get at whatever the data is. So that's still the goal of encryption at rest in the cloud. It's typically targeting the scenario where a stolen hard drive or a hostile force has broken into a data center and taken a hard drive, and then tries to do just that, get that data by putting it into another machine and getting at it.
So when you say, so sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, so just to kind of clarify, when we say like data at rest or encryption for data at rest, it seems like there's like multiple ways we could actually encrypt data that we're holding inside like the Azure storage subsystem, like a client side model as versus this is more of a server side, is that correct?
When we just are talking generally about encryption at rest, they both would fit under that umbrella. And then within the scope of both of server-side encryption, we would say that there's different kind of configurations for that as well. So yes, there is a client side where clients can do the encryption with their own keys, their own key management, and then Azure basically stores encrypted data. And the downside to that is that there's less cloud functionality, less, you know, machine learning and analytics are possible because we can't see the data. And then on the server side, where we do have access to the key, there's varying degrees of customer management of the key. If the customer just wants to ensure that the data is encrypted at rest, protecting against the scenario I described, they can just tell us to make sure the data is encrypted at rest. And then if they want more control, though, say they have their own compliance requirements and the nature of the key has to be thus and so, they can set it up such that they provide the key into the key vault. And then we will use that key. Right? And then there's some scenarios where customers have wanted to store the key on their end and release it when needed to the server. And there's only a few of those because that, as you can imagine, creates a network dependency on the cloud into the on-prem servers, and that creates difficulty in defining an SLA. And debatably, you know, the security is probably overall promises about the same, meaning that the cloud will have the key when in that model when it needs it.
I see. So the server side is pretty much like Microsoft will kind of manage that for you, meaning like key management and all the stuff associated with it. It's more of like a PaaS type thing where you just say, I just want to make sure this is encrypted. You guys take care of that. Make sure that everything I write there is encrypted. And then the client side gives a bit more control, but then obviously there's a bit more management that the customer needs to take on to do those kind of things.
Yeah. And in the server side, there's, you know, the customer can manage the key to varying degrees if they want to.
Yep. So does this cover from a storage perspective? When I think about storage, I'm thinking about, you know, we typically provision like a storage account, which allows us to do, you know, blobs, tables, queues, and files. So does this across the board kind of cover all those things, or is it limited to specific subservices inside of there?
So both actually, it as we light things up, it will be covered by all these services. Currently, where not everything has encryption at rest on by default or supported. So, and you mentioned storage and blobs and tables and such. And I believe that those are in preview right now. Mm-hmm. And you can go, you know, enable those yourself in terms of server-side encryption. But a particular Azure service, you know, say DocDB, right? Azure Data Lake. Not all of them are being lit up at the same time. Some of those have support already, such as Azure Data Lake. Some of them will soon, hopefully, such as DocDB.
So it's interesting. That's so not just the first party storage services, but also some of these other storage services like Data Lake, etc., are having this feature. What's common? Are they sharing some common storage infrastructure that's enabling this technology?
Very often, yes and no. Very often, when they do, they share a common store, such as storage, blobs. They are. Part of the encryption at rest story is that it comes from the fact that they're sharing the backend store. But then a lot of them, when they host the data in their own service and they are slicing and dicing and, you know, they're running, maybe storing a temporary file here or there, or maybe file gets popped into, or data gets popped into the page file. You know, encryption at rest has to account for those scenarios as well. So just having the data backed up in storage or living primarily in storage doesn't mean you have end-to-end encryption at rest. If storage does, I mean, there's more work to do. And so some of these services really won't have it until they've done that bit of work completely. There's phases by which they get it.
I see. And Emmett, did you have to do something special on the Key Vault side to enable this functionality? How does that play in here?
So if the service offers encryption at rest with customer managed key, then certainly Key Vault is in picture here. So usually the service will have customer create a key vault, put their key in, and then configure the said service to say use this key for encryption encryption address for my data, and it essentially is using the key vault key as a master key, and then there is always a chain of keys that is used. Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's two, depending on the way data is stored. So from customer's point of view, what customers will need to do in that case is create the key vault, create the key, take the key backup, and do all the necessary things for setting up permissions, and then they set up this service so that the encryption on server side will always use the key vault key.
Okay.
So one question I had about this, the life cycle of these keys specifically, Amit, was if a customer's not managing their keys, if we're managing the keys for them, like in that server side, is that something that gets rotated? Like if I'm storing, you know, 5 terabytes of data up here or something, is that something where like eventually those keys will get cycled, like and to get changed?
Yes. So each service decides, for example, if you're talking strictly about service managed keys where Microsoft is managing the keys, then yes, there is a rotation period after which they will rotate the keys. But the customer has to do nothing here because keys are being managed by Microsoft. If this is customer managed keys for that service, then the customer has a complete freedom on when to rotate the keys. They can rotate, and then it depends on what service they are using. Some services allow customers to rotate the key and they will just automatically pick it up. In some cases, like Data Lake Store, you go rotate the key and then you will change the service configuration so that it will pick up the new key.
Okay, and is this like a symmetric encryption algorithm? I'm just trying to imagine like what is the overhead that it imposes if someone decides to turn this on for storage?
So in most cases, we use most of the services that have enabled encryption at rest are essentially using envelope encryption. So there will be some data encryption key, which is usually AES 256, a symmetric key, and then there will be a wrapping key or a KEK, key encryption key, which is an RSA 2048-bit key that is used. So that way you will have a hierarchy of keys in most cases. And the idea is you would want to do bulk data encryption using symmetric keys for performance reasons. And then you would want to do wrapping of those symmetric keys with a asymmetric key, RSA type key at the top level only.
And I'll add to that you would want to, typically, and most services do, as data grows, they try to introduce more data encryption keys so that they partition the data in case there's a role. Then the scope of the role won't be as big, or if a key is compromised, the scope of the compromised wouldn't be as big either.
That's a good point. Cool. Yeah.
One question I had too, just like for our listeners who may have been Azure customers for a while, should I assume that this stuff only works in the ARM world as opposed to like classic, if I had some classic storage accounts, is this something people are going to run into, and as well as what Sajid just mentioned, where maybe I already have a lot of existing data. Are there any, if I turn on encryption, is it only for new stuff? We'll go back and do the old stuff. What's the life cycle like there?
So do not assume that. Check the current status for a particular resource manager. But those, the services, the bigger services that have lots of dependencies are the ones we primarily focus on. They do typically have plans to both turn it on by default and eventually get all data encrypted at rest, unless there's some type of opt-out needed. So while, say, you know, an ARM might be, might not be available as soon as, say, a new storage account, we are looking to get that kind of retroactive encrypted. Mm-hmm. At some point, there's a lot of data, so When it all becomes encrypted is a little ambiguous at this point, but yes, it will be retroactive in most of these services, and we'll have more data on that available about which ones pretty soon in the form of a white paper.
Awesome.
Okay.
And how does it affect like Azure backup, you know, taking a backup of the storage or restoring it if it's, you know, if the encryption is on? I don't know if it has any effect, but I'm just thinking aloud here.
I'll think out loud too. I think that the last that I saw on this was that it just takes the encrypted blob and backs up that encrypted blob. So it doesn't unencrypt and re-encrypt. It just copies the encrypted form. But that's the sort of thing that will vary from service to service. Say, something is at a higher level encrypted, and then a backup is taken, say, of a VM, you know, an IaaS scenario. That might be re-encrypted. Some percentage of that might be re-encrypted. That's conceivable, right? But typically, that's the services are optimizing the processes so that there wouldn't be doing that double encryption for backup purposes.
Okay, that makes sense. And
it kind of depends at where the level is. Right? If it's high in the application layer, it's probably going to be in the backup's probably going to get double encrypted. If it's low, if it's disk encryption or something, then it won't, or blob encryption.
So if a VM is using one of these storage accounts, which is, has the encryption turned on, does that mean Windows can turn off BitLocker now? Would that also mean double encryption?
If a VM has, no. So when you say BitLocker, you're talking about an IaaS scenario where somebody has enabled BitLocker?
Yeah.
There will be, so in the fullness of time, the encryption will come lower than that disk encryption that you're describing there. And at that time, the answer would be yes. But until that time, then no. And the way we hope to do that encryption, they shouldn't see a difference in terms of performance or something like that.
I think the question that Sujit is asking is this, that I have my disk images stored on storage account. I have enabled encryption on my storage account. Do I still need to enable BitLocker encryption on my VMs? Right. Correct. So I would say it is still better to have that encryption because there is defense in depth, because you have your VM image. Let's say you created an encrypted VM image on-prem and then brought it into Azure. You stored it in your Azure storage. Your storage is also using server-side encryption, let's say, for your blobs. But if somebody gets access to your storage and you don't have your VM image encrypted, then now you have you are exposed because that VM image is now compromised. So it is better to have multiple levels of protection for especially sensitive data. So defense in depth is the strategy to go there.
That's fair. Yep. And how does this impact, like, is there like an additional cost by turning this on from a pricing perspective? What is the story over here?
So far, there is no additional cost to turn on encryption at rest. Generally speaking, I don't know of a scenario where there's a cost.
Yeah. Only thing is that, for example, in some cases, like VMs, only the standard VMs, you get the encryption feature, not the basic VMs. So, but there is no cost, extra cost that you are paying for the encryption itself.
Right, other than the key vault cost, which I suppose is normally there.
Is there any additional, I had a question about the IaaS scenario there. So I'm just thinking through scenarios of, you know, I'm on the East Coast US and I have a bunch of VMs, a bunch of IaaS VMs running in the East Coast data center region, and I have disk encryption turned on. So obviously I'm using key, let's say I have the operating system drive as well as maybe data disks. So those key vaults are there, but if there is I replicate these to the West Coast for like a DR type scenario. Is there anything special I have to do to make sure that my keys are going to be available in that other region, like in the case of a failover or whatnot?
Yeah, so if you are specifically in case of Azure Disk Encryption, Azure Compute, the service which basically runs your VMs, they require you to have your key vaults in the same region as your VMs. And this is so that outage in one region does not cause you to your VMs to not boot in another region. So you want to keep your key vault and your VMs in the same region. So if you want to replicate the whole setup, then you should replicate the key vaults and the VMs in another region. That way you are not dependent on another region for booting your VMs in East US.
Awesome. Yeah, I was wondering if that was like a default or something, like if somebody said I turned on disk encryption and I have GRS turned on or something, like some sort of a failover for there, it doesn't automatically say, hey, by the way, make sure you replicate your key vault. It's something that the customer needs to take advantage, remember, basically.
That is true. I mean, especially for Azure Disk Encryption, Key Vault does have inbuilt high availability features, but they are not in picture here because you are essentially saying don't take dependency on other regions for your VMs booting in East US, for example.
Yeah.
Speaking of regions, are there any data sovereignty issues that we have to take into account when enabling disk encryption? Like, for example, are there any restrictions in other countries or other regions where this should not be done or cannot be done?
I'm not aware of any scenarios where you cannot turn on server-side encryption. I guess I wouldn't be shocked if there was one. Amit, have you come across such a thing?
Yeah, so there is no restriction as such, though there is, especially if you are using Key Vault for customer control keys, and if you want to bring your own keys into Key Vault using Key Vault's own bring your own key process, then there is no restriction. You can bring your keys and copy them anywhere you want because they are your keys, and you can use the same keys in multiple regions, though that would not be a recommended approach. You want to create different keys for every region anyway. The only restriction is if you generate keys in Key Vault, then they will not be, you won't be able to sort of do a backup and restore in another geographic region. So here, geographic region is usually all the Azure locations in US are one geographic region. Canada, Europe, Australia, Japan, each have a different security world, as we call it. These are the security boundaries for your keys. So keys generated in one region cannot be backup restored into another region.
Okay. That's good. I mean, part of the reason I was asking the question was, I remember back in the day, like for example, the United States had certain encryption algorithms which they said, could only be used inside of the United States, right? They couldn't be used elsewhere. So I don't know if there's any such limitations where the algorithm that's used to encrypt the data, is different in different regions.
Yeah, so far we haven't bumped into that. But again, I wouldn't be surprised if, tomorrow somewhere in the world, some legislation was passed that made that an issue.
So for Key Vault, there is such a scenario. Essentially, in Azure China, Key Vault is only available as a standard SKU, which supports software keys because the HSMs that we are using, they do not, the government regulations that require them to have specific compliance. So the HSMs that we use do not comply with those. So we are only offering software keys in China, for example.
Okay, that's good. Very thorough. This is good. Very good information. Cale, any more questions for our guests?
No, I think this has been a good kind of overview of the Key Vault interaction with the different types of ways that we can have encryption at rest. And So I thought it was beneficial. I hope our listeners got something out of this.
Yeah, it's good. I can protect my data so that Big Brother can't be watching. It's good to have that. extra step there.
Well, I'll restate the goals are, you know, in case Big Brother or anybody, little brother, comes in and grabs a disk, you know, from a data center. That's the primary goal, and yep. not so much to prevent, you know, other vectors of, you know, of hacking out that exists out there. If somebody's, you know, I don't know, yeah. somebody's snooping somebody's email
Stripping
or somebody's
the wire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, to restate Dave's point in different language, essentially, this is just one kind of attack that encryption address tries to mitigate. Other kinds of attacks like stealing your token or hacking into your VM itself, those are not going to be mitigated by just enabling disk encryption for your VM, for example. Because if the attacker is on your VM, disk encryption doesn't help you. So people who are looking at all these encryption address options should be aware that this is not one single thing that you turn on and forget about all security.
Got it. That's very, very good. Thank you. All right, guys. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to join us and give our listeners a flavor for encryption address. Thank you again. And we'll wrap up the show here.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.